Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite transatlantic football podcast here for one more time in the World Cup as we look forward to Sunday's World Cup final, which is going to be Argentina against Spain after both made it out of their semi-finals in very, very different ways. We'll be talking about all of that today. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host. And joining me across the water is the one and only Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm all right. Considering England have just been knocked out of the World Cup, I'm all right. Very level-headed about the situation, as anyone that listens to the Patreon will know.
Yeah, I was going to say, we did a podcast straight after the game yesterday, and I was expecting hot-headed fire, Dean. You know that emoji of the dude with a flame coming out of his head? That was what I was expecting coming into that. And the most rational, reasonable person arrived on the other end of it. And I was like, oh, wow, maybe I'm going to have to do the irrational.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think people were disappointed in the end. People were arguing back at me, saying things that I would normally be saying, but I don't know if it's just that I've seen it a million times before, Jack, maybe. But I was to be sat there defending Thomas Tuchel is definitely not a situation that I thought I'd be in. And I'm not absolving him of the blame because that'd be wrong. Like he definitely wasn't right in his decision making in the second half. But my main point across it was like, I don't think there's barely anyone else in the world who would have done much different to what Tuchel did, given the status of the game, the options that were available to him. People saying we should have went too defensive, should have gone more front footed, should have done this, should have done that. It takes some balls to suddenly like put on Marcus Rashford or something in that situation. Like that was more of my point. It's like, it's very easy to think that, to say this in hindsight, it's very easy to even think at the time as you're watching TV, but to implement those changes in game when you're 1-0 up against Argentina and starting to look like survival might be possible. Yeah, it's, I understand why he made the decisions he did. The thing I don't like is the options that were available, like Ezri Konsa, right? I had concerns about that all the way through the World Cup. Like I always thought, like I go through in my head, like would I trust? Do I trust him? Do I trust him? And Konsa was always one was like, no, I wouldn't really trust him. And unfortunately, we end up with Konsa being the one who's trying to cross into the box to give us a magical moment that kind of mirrors the moment that Argentina take the lead against us. And that was never going to happen, Jack. That was never going to happen because he hasn't got the discipline, control or quality to do that. And that ended up for me being the bigger gap that we had to fill.
Yeah, I think it's, no, I totally get your point. You've seen it all before. You just know you're so sure as the song goes. But
yeah, there, 60 years of hope.
Doesn't feel like you from where I'm standing today, from what I've heard from you. But I do think, look, you can go two ways with it. And we'll come away from this because this is a final preview. And actually, if you want our full breakdown of the semi-finals, it's over there on the Patreon where we talked all of this through properly. But I feel like not leaving any transitional threat on whatsoever felt like a mistake. Equally, I do appreciate, and I think you can appreciate that if Tuchel had gone super attacking or super transitional, not put all those players behind the ball and Argentina had scored twice, everyone would be like, why don't you just protect the lead? Mm-hmm. So there is also a damned if you do, damned if you don't. And if actually England had seen out those last 5 minutes and were in the World Cup final, people would be talking about another defensive masterclass as they did against Mexico, as they did against Norway in those final moments as well. And so, you know, you're ultimately, the decisions you make, you kind of live and die by them. And ultimately it hasn't come out the right side for Thomas Tuchel. And therefore he is, and rightly so, taking the kind of anger because of the decisions that he made. That's life as a football manager.
It absolutely is, Jack, but it does take us on to the wider discussion around Argentina. Mate, can they keep doing this? Can they do it another time to win the final? Because their knockout journey has been absolutely ridiculous. Like, this doesn't seem sustainable. Cape Verde, they win 3-2 after extra time. Egypt, they're 2-0 down. There's 10 minutes or so left. They come back and they win 3-2. Mind blowing. Then the quarterfinals, they play against Switzerland. They take the lead. You think, okay, this one should be nice and composed. It's not that way. It ends 1-1, has to go to extra time. They dig in. It's not until the very last minute of extra time that they put the icing on the cake and they seal that one. And then they play England in the semi-final and they have to come from behind again. And it takes until the last 5 minutes of the game when they're actually looking like they're actually in control. Can they do that again, Jack? Like, doing that against those teams who are all different, you know, like Cape Verde, Egypt, Switzerland, England, they all have different strengths. They're all of different rankings. You're now going up against Spain. And if Spain go 1-0 up, are Argentina able to force a comeback win like they've made? It's basically their tactic at this point. Like, it's basically what they're built upon. And you were saying on the Patreon yesterday, you know, England are just all about passion and, you know, you've got to do it, like desire and all this. My argument is that Argentina are too, but they have a little bit more discipline and technique when it comes to actually carrying out the end product, so that when Enzo Fernandez is hitting that shot, when Messi is making that final pass, it's just more composed. Really, really split the teams in the end, right? But I'm really struggling to understand whether Argentina's pathway to getting here can succeed in a final.
It depends if they go 1-0 down or not. It's what we've learned from this tournament thus far. Also, just an aside before I answer that question, are Cap Verde the third, fourth best team in this tournament?
Like, yeah, I mean, they should be in the third and fourth place playoff, shouldn't they?
They took Spain all the way over 90 minutes and drew that game. And then they took Argentina to 120 minutes and gave them probably the best game that anyone's given them. Like, they might be top five team of this tournament, genuinely.
Mate, and France and England would happily give them that third place medal. Like, they deserve it more. They deserve it more. Like, England and France don't want to be playing that game. And Cape Verde should be, it should be like a celebration day. Bring them back to the tournament and have an exhibition.
Can't do it, unfortunately. Pico Lopez has said go back to Talat to play for Shamrock Rovers, where he helped them qualify through the first preliminary round of the Champions League in a 5-1 win over Floriana in midweek. That guy's having some summer, is what I would say about it all. But yeah, look, I just think that we should be giving them their flowers as one of genuinely the best teams in this tournament, considering what else. And look, if you go back and run the tapes on our preview podcast, we got to the one with Argentina, and I think you'll find the exact phrase that I used was, I don't know exactly how good they are. I don't think they're that good, but good luck beating them. And thus it has proved, right? Like, that is what we've seen play out over the course of this tournament. They do not win though when they're dead. They do not know when to give up. They don't have that in their vocabulary. And actually, when we're kind of talking about this team, you know, anyone else 2-0 down against Spain on the 80th minute, let's just say, as a kind of potential scenario, you'd be like, game done, dusted, buried. And it probably would be, because Spain aren't going to retreat in the same way that other teams perhaps have. But also, would you write off Argentina pulling off another ridiculous comeback, considering what they've achieved so far in this tournament? And they are the only team in the tournament that I think you would have that conversation about. There is no one. If Argentina are 2-0 up in the 80th minute, I don't think we're going to see a Spain comeback. Now, I also don't think that's going to happen, but for what it's worth, I don't think you see that Spain comeback. I think if there's a 2-0 up for Spain in the 80th minute, no one is turning that game off. No one is like, job done. And it is one of those kind of weird things where they just have this unbelievable resilience about them that effectively drives them onwards and onwards and onwards. And they all know, and I think maybe it changes now, because whatever happens, this feels like it's probably Lionel Messi's last game at a World Cup. I mean, don't completely write him off playing at 43, but I think it's unlikely if we're being honest. But it felt like every time they were like, nah, this can't end just yet. We're not ready for this to end just yet. We're not ready for Lionel to play his final game in a World Cup. And they have found ways to make it happen for him. Now he probably will be playing that final game that we talk about in a World Cup, but he's going to be in a World Cup final with the chance to go back to back, something that hasn't been achieved since Brazil in the 50s. Lionel Scaloni has the opportunity to go back to back for the first time since Italy in the 30s. And you're like, what is going on here? This didn't seem possible. Everyone looked at this team and thought, 4 years older, they're probably past their prime. Their main man is a 39-year-old playing in MLS. and yet they have found themselves here again. And I think by that kind of measure, writing them off at this point seems absolutely ridiculous, even if I think Spain are the better team.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, got your Messi defending a World Cup in a final when he's favourite to win the Golden Boot, favourite to win the Golden Ball, and favourite to win the Ballon d'Or, right? He doesn't seem like the type of player that comes up short in a moment like that. It's outrageous, really, to consider that at 39, we're putting him back in that Ballon d'Or conversation, but he is now favourite to go and do that, win it for a ninth time. I think Ronaldo hasn't won it since 2017. Messi obviously won it 2 or 3 years ago.
Post-World Cup, yeah.
Yes, of course, yeah. So to now be back in that conversation. And in the last World Cup, it was like, oh, finally, Messi's turned up for a World Cup. And now in this World Cup, he's like blown that one out of the water. Really? I know in like a statistical point, he's only one goal ahead from what he was in Qatar, but like his performances have been like different level to then.
I don't know. I think they've been on a par, and he was unbelievable in Qatar as well. And it is impressive.
Oh, he didn't do it in the knockout. He struggled for fitness more. And in the knockouts, he didn't have that definitive characteristic that like, you know, it was a bit more of a grind. You know what I mean? Like it was a...
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting about Messi at this World Cup is that it felt like in the knockout stages, he was like, fine, I'll score all the goals. And then it got to in the group stage, sorry. And then in the knockout stages, he was like, fine, I'll just assist all the goals. And it's just like, he's just decided, he was like, okay, that's enough of being the goal scorer. What I'll do now is be the main creative force of this team. It is absurd to be doing what he's doing at 39 years old. And this is the thing. I was looking at the stats from yesterday. He had most big chances created, obviously got two assists. You look at the game, he took the most take-ons, I think, the most chances created for any player. And you're thinking about it, be like, he was shackled for 65 minutes and he still did all that in the last sort of 20.
Well, I think we rattled him, didn't we? We wound him up a bit, didn't we? And it was like he...
That seems like a bad idea, man. Like,
it was a bad idea. It was a terrible idea. I don't know what Bellingham was doing, but... The thing I've found most impressive about him, to be honest, is the amount of minutes he's played at this World Cup. It's outrageous. He barely missed a minute. Like, this is a guy that we watch across an MLS season, and they're like, oh, can he play two games a week? Can he play back-to-back games? Shall he just play home games? And here he is, travelling around America, playing every few days. And I know his game's changed and he doesn't like run to the extent that others do, but like still he's got to get, he gets kicked, he gets whacked, he's covered in, yeah, I think how many bruises he comes away with from a game. Like, yeah. And it's still hard at 39, no matter how fit you've kept yourself, that is hard. And he's still out there for the durations and making the difference even in that semi-final right at the death with his passing. So I'm beyond like understanding the guy. Like he's
extraterrestrial.
He really is, mate. And like, well, I'm not going to go into the whole GOAT debate right now, but I think these are two just completely different characters, personalities, footballers, right? And Messi is just every time just setting new standards and new levels that no one's ever really going to live up to, as far as I'm concerned now.
Once in a generation player, right? Like, and that's what we've seen. He has been just absolutely unbelievable for 20 years. And that is ridiculous.
20 years.
Like, 20 years.
20 years. And you see like modern day footballers honestly struggling to have that sort of sustainability over 2 or 3 years because it's so hard to stay fit and in form. And here he is, yeah, leading Argentina into another World Cup final. And looking to win his third golden ball as well. So that's big for him. And another historic moment and a landmark, which I'm sure he's set because I'm pretty sure they vote already before the final has even taken place. So I'm pretty sure he's already won that one.
I think he's joint top of the goals chart. He's second in the assists chart. I don't think anyone's taken on more players. Anyone's created more chances. Like it does.
Rodri's not getting this award, is it? Yeah. Like we'll talk about Spain's most important players, but there's nobody that could be considered as important as well, this.
That's not to Spain's strength, right? And we'll talk about it properly, but like the collective is the strength of Spain. And therefore it's harder to pick out superstars in an individual level. And we can talk about that in a second. But I would just say this. One of the things that interests me the most about Argentina is that it doesn't seem to matter how their careers have been going at club level when they walk back into that international dressing room, right? Because if you look at this team, it's not been a good year for Christian Romero. It's not been a particularly good year for Lisandro Martinez. Emi Martinez, I think, has had a good season, especially in the back half of the season with Villa. I think he became very, very important again and stood up to be counted. But it's not been, you know, absolutely flying for either of the fullback. Alexis has had a really difficult season at Liverpool. Enzo Fernandez has had a very difficult season at Chelsea, and two sides that have struggled to meet the expectations. Thiago Almada has barely played minutes for Atletico Madrid. Nico Gonzalez has really struggled for minutes. Julian Alvarez has been hot and cold. He's had very good streaks, but you know, nothing where you'd be like, okay, wow, he's had an absolutely unbelievable year. Rodrigo de Paul has been here and there for Inter Miami. Messi's been missing for much of the back end of the season. Lautaro has been injured for up and down bits of it, although he remains incredibly important to Inter. But when you put all this in context, they like walk back into that dressing room and is like, oh, okay, cool. Like, it's like they get like a hit of juice and it's like, oh, okay, doesn't matter what you did in your clubs this season. You're back with the RB Celeste. You're back with the national team. And this is what matters. And maybe there is a level that this just matters more to this Argentine squad. But I think it is incredible that they are able to kind of turn that kind of club form around every time, it seems, they step on the pitch for their country.
Yeah, and it does go back to that passion and pride thing, which, you know, people knock England for, but which is literally Argentina's biggest strength. The difference is, say you get an England team who are, I don't know, take the Arsenal players, for example, you know, and they've achieved this extremely memorable, brilliant season at club level, but then they've got to this stage, and probably for everything they've put into that club campaign, they're now struggling to get back to that for now. And they're trying their best to be there and available, but they're not able to perform at their best. And there's not really, we've literally had three, maybe four England players who have actually played at their top level at this World Cup. Whereas in those moments that matter for Argentina, you're just getting everyone exceed what is supposed to be possible for them. Like Paredes, right, is just like, his brain at work in these World Cup games is just a unbelievable. Like you just see him and kind of calculating what's going on around him and kind of trying to bring everything together with McAllister, with Enzo, and they're like, you know, between the three of those, you've just got so many different traits that can claw you back into it, can bring control back. And you know, I do think that's something that Spain will find difficult. The never say die attitude, yes, but also the fact that they are also like extremely good footballers with a high IQ in that sense is a very complex combination to outwit, especially over 90 minutes. And that's what I would say about Argentina, is that they are taking every game to be fulfilled within its duration. And it's like, they are not great across an entire game. They're not. But they are also making sure that they do not give up until that they are told that that game is over. And they will use the 90 minutes as is needed and the extra time as is needed. And that is a massive strength going into this final. And while I have Spain as favourites and I would probably pick them to win, part of me is just like, why am I not just backing Argentina given everything we've seen so far?
Yeah, they're a hard team to back against, I think, is the key element. One last bit on this. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about Argentina's dark arts over the course of this tournament. It's been referred to by lots of names. Skullduggery by Rodney Marsh might be my favourite of the lot. But there's a term for this in kind of the Rio de la Plata region, which is viveza criolla or criolla, depending on where you are. And it basically means native cunning, right? It's kind of like ingenuity or survival to basically get through this situation you have in front of you, no matter if you're equipped for it or not. And it's utilized kind of in this region to discuss, you know, Uruguay talk about it quite a lot as well. I think as well in Venezuela, but you're looking at it and thinking, okay, what is this? It's something that's been associated with this team in variety of different forms for a lot of ways. Now, I'm glad, and I know you are too, that yesterday we ended up having a conversation after the game that wasn't about refereeing, that wasn't about officiating, it wasn't about VAR. It was about the football match that unfolded in front of us. That didn't look like it was going to be the case when it got to halftime. And there was all of these little niggly fouls. And we see Simeone effectively take six fouls in the first half without getting a booking because they're all little niggly fouls rather than one big one. And then Elliot Anderson gets booked for a takeout, which is a card. But I think the argument is that someone else should have been booked beforehand for some of the things that are happening. Yeah. Is that something that works? The kind of image of Spain here, and I think to England, it was a question of, can you rattle them? Can you get in their heads? But to Spain, who are a very clean cut team, like the image of Spain is Rodri with his shirt tucked in, effectively puffing on a cigar whilst he does it. Do Argentina try to roughhouse Spain here? Or is there too much of a respect for the kind of brand of football to even go down that pathway?
Yeah, I do think the approach will be different here. You know, we saw from the first whistle in the first few minutes of the England game that they were just trying to spark a reaction. And I understand why they do that, because England, you know, historically will react. And if you can get that upper hand, get a yellow card in those first few minutes, then obviously you take it. It's horrible to play against and not particularly nice to watch. But there's more than one way to win a football game, and that's what Argentina remind us all of the time. I do think they will have a different level of respect for Spain. There's not the level of animosity, but also like they
which is funny as a colonizer playing a formerly colonized state in some ways.
But the thing they were able to do with England was that would distract us from what our strengths were by reducing us to only being able to play in bits and pieces because they were kept cutting up the play and stopping play and making these fouls. It meant that England's biggest strength, which is exploding forward with the four or five that can break away, barely done it. We barely had a moment. Like Anthony Gordon's goal was a rare moment in that game of us actually doing anything like that, which has been one of our strengths of the tournament, to score a goal in that kind of manner, or at least try to score a goal in that manner. But Spain's strength is obviously like discipline, control, and I don't know, you're just like kind of forcing the moments. You're just moving the opposition around. And like, I don't think fouling Spain is really going to stop that. Like, you can try, but I think actually this is the game when I wonder if refs are finally actually cut that short. So if there is, in the first 5 minutes, you go in on the back of Rodri's ankle and it goes in, I reckon it's a yellow card. I reckon that in the final, we don't see the level of leniency that we've seen to make it clear from the off, no. We're having a football match here. Like, you've got to be at your best today. Maybe that's hope from me. Maybe that's me not wanting Argentina to have their own way in that sense for this occasion and for it to be pure football. But I think to kick Spain is going to be, I don't know. I don't really think that that's the way to approach this one, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, nor do I. And I think it's going to be interesting seeing how they handle that situation and what it looks like. But I guess we will all find out together on that regard. Right, let's take a break there. And we come back on the other side. We're going to talk more about their opponent, Spain. Stick with us here on Ranks FC.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. Look, Jack, when we previewed the semi-finals on Patreon, I was pretty sure that France were going to be progressing to the final. They were seen off in pretty convincing fashion by Spain in the end. 2-0, you know, one thing I had said on The Athletic, and I did a preview piece, was like how penalties could define where we end up with a final. And it wasn't necessarily like by shootouts. I just meant like in moments that could open up. And Spain hadn't had a penalty yet. And I had this awareness in my brain, like that can't carry on. Surely they're going to get a spot kick. We haven't seen them get one. We don't know who takes them. We assume it's Oyarzabal. And obviously he scores the opening goal from the spot against France. And then Pedro Porro finishes off a lovely little move to make it 2-0 in the second half. And France can't really respond in any convincing manner to give themselves hope at the death of forcing themselves into the final. So for Spain to beat France 2-0 in a semi-final, extremely significant, convincingly through. In that sense, they should be considered favourites for what they've done so far. What's your like top line feeling on how they approach this game and whether they can finish off the job?
Well, I think the win over France was a triumph of the collective, right? Like, and when we talk about these things in lots of different ways, I was lucky enough to speak to Ramon Calderon, the former president of Real Madrid, on the radio the other day. I mentioned this on our Patreon podcast about this game, but it was kind of interesting to him. I was trying to push him on, you know, how good is Pau Cabarsi at 19 years old? You know, how good was Rodri in this game? What about Marc Cucurella? And his answer to all of them was, this was a team performance. Because I don't want to talk about individuals. This is the kind of thing. Now, the line he used that I thought was really interesting is, this kind of game tape will be studied at coaching academies. That's how good Spain were. This was the best team performance of the World Cup thus far. It might well end up being the best performance of the World Cup, full stop, depending on how Sunday's final goes. But I think that what we saw from Spain was just this incredible amount of control in the first half, utilizing possession. And it was a little bit like, you can't play with our ball at times in that first half. And in the second half, they effectively gave the ball to France for long periods and said, okay, we're going to do with it. What are you going to do to break us down? We're not going to sit there and allow you to run in behind. We know you have superstar attackers. We still have the control in the midfield when we do have the ball. It wasn't, you know, like France had 80% of the ball in the second half or anything, but they were just so consummately professional in the way that they measured this game. Now, there are caveats to this. One, Spain obviously get a penalty early on that you mentioned there, that Lamine Yamal wins off Luka Dean, who's had a brilliant tournament up to that point, but did look like maybe the weak link in this team. And he's just not looking where he goes. It comes off the top of Yamal's kind of shirt sleeve, but it's not a handball. And this is as close to a stonewall penalty as I think you're going to get. The ball bounces to a Spain player as well. So there's no advantage by kind of pulling it back if you don't give the penalty. I think that it is deservedly given. And I had absolutely no doubt that Oyarzabal was going to score at that moment. And you know what's funny? Because the commentator here in the UK, and I can't remember who the life it was, it might have been Sam Matafes, was like, "Mom, Mike Maignan, he's a penalty specialist." I was like, "Do you know who else is a penalty specialist?" Ken Oyarzabal, 90% hit rate over the course of a sort of 60 penalties in his career. He doesn't tend to miss them for Spain.
Such a good penalty.
Such a good penalty. And from there, the game state is where Spain want it to be. You know, France had their best spell of the game probably in the first 15 minutes, where they get a couple of chances, they get crowded out. But maybe that was the kind of moment, you see that when Mbappe gets played through by Dembele and he looks like he's going to work himself a shot on goal and he's crowded out by four Spanish defenders. And you're thinking, is that how this game is going to go? And thus it panned out, right? Thus it proved. We saw the game effectively work out from that position. But I thought that Luis de la Fuente made some really interesting calls. To not play Pedri and play Fabian Ruiz instead was a big call in a game that they would have wanted control in. But what that allowed them to do was effectively isolate Alex Baena as an open pass over and over and over again. So they always had an out ball. They were so comfortable and so confident knocking the ball around in that final third. Their press was unbelievable. Dani Olmo and his defensive work rate. Yes, he gets a beautiful assist for Pedro Porro, but his defensive work rate dropping into that midfield was night and day from where Michael Olise was as the number 10 for France, who effectively felt like he was a bit stuck between where to press and where not to press. I just thought that Spain across the board and pretty much every single man on that pitch was absolutely brilliant. And when they make the subs, there is no drop off. And this is the natural kind of kind of reaction, I suppose, to the fact that you build a team through your youth development. You build an under-19s team, an under-17s team, an under-21s team. You play them all in exactly the same way. You bring through a coach who has prioritized youth development, has worked with those youth age groups before. And suddenly when players come into the first team and, you know, maybe some of them don't have as many caps, Alex Baena is not as good a player, I don't think, on an individual technical level as a Nico Williams is. Does it matter? Not a jot, because this team are so drilled in the way that they play. They work things so beautifully, and effectively they just kept France at arm's length and then felt like they had their moments to pick off in terms of incision. And again, you could point to this Spain back four. Now, I think Pau Cabarsí is an absolute wonder kid, but he's still a 19-year-old playing centre-back in his first major tournament. He's alongside Aymeric Laporte, who spent a year out in Saudi and has come back to Athletic, where he's been good, but not brilliant, I think, in terms of what he's put together. Marc Cucurella is a love-hate character, although he's had a phenomenal World Cup, I think. And Pedro Porro is a player that everyone was like, oh, he's excellent going forward, but has no defensive capability. They've got Unai Simón behind them, who many people think is the third best goalkeeper in this Spanish squad. Never mind at the World Cup, they've conceded one goal. And it does go to show how a system works, how a manager who wants to buy into these players works. I'm just so impressed by what they've been able to pull together in this format, in this setup. They've gone a little bit under the radar. They've been a little bit submarine waiting to emerge. But that performance against France was the one that I think everybody woke up and realized just how capable this Spain side are. They have not got worse since the last Euros, where they were absolutely brilliant. And if they go on and win on Sunday's final, I think we might be seeing the birth of another period of serious domination from Spain.
Yeah, one of the problems Argentina have got here is that, like, from an outsider slash neutral perspective, Spain would be described as quite boring, right? That their style of play is probably seen by a lot of people to be boring. Now, as to a football purist or a tactician or a coach, you absolutely wouldn't say that. But to your average fan who's just looking to watch a good game, you don't really want to watch Spain because it's calm, it's disciplined, it's controlled. Everybody knows their role, no matter whether they're starting or if they're on the bench. They know when they're coming in exactly what their role within that setup is. I saw a description of it the other day that was like, watching Spain is like watching a Mayweather fight. It's technically amazing, but so boring to watch, right? And it's like, this is how good they are. And this is a problem for Argentina, because on an individual basis, they can be emotive and they can get wrapped up in situations, you know, Cucurella and stuff. Like, I'm fully aware of the fact that these guys can have head loss. But as a collective, no, I wouldn't really expect that. I expect them to stick up for each other. I expect them to come together. But a moment of madness for this team, probably not. And so this controlled style of play is something that's fully deserved them getting to this stage. But I don't know that they have been particularly entertaining to a lot of people. But they are brilliant. They are totally brilliant. And actually, someone like Dani Olmo jumps out to me as someone that's never spoken about. Never, when you reel off the names in the Spain team, does anyone really stop and discuss Dani Olmo. But I think that that's why you should stop and discuss Dani Olmo and the sort of role that he could have in this team, because he's so dangerous, because he's almost invisible, right? He's like a ghost.
He has the brightest hair in the business.
Yeah, that's true. He shouldn't be invisible because he's right there. But he kind of guides into positions. He's not Messi-like, but he is in that sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, he has a presence. He has an ability to turn up. And as you notice him, it's too late, because he's already seen the space. He's already anticipated where the play is going to end up and how he can influence it. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. And so for every Spain player, you could find a Dani Olmo type argument for why they could be the most important player on this team. And I think it's right that Oyarzabal gets his plaudits. And Yamal and Kubasi and Rodri, whatever. But the thing is that they are such a collective, and it's in a different way to the fact that Argentina, like we say, are basically punching above their weight at this tournament as a collective. And Spain aren't. Like, Spain have a collection of absolutely brilliant technical players who we all watch pretty much every week, and we know that. Yet they can also do it coming together in a way that a team like England cannot. I'm in awe of them, really, to be honest with you. To be able to support a nation like this must just be unbelievable. Like, it's such a surprise to me, Jack, that this is only their second ever World Cup final. How? How can this be Spain's second ever World Cup final?
Years of wilderness were long, right? They were fundamentally football's nearly men for so long. They were the underachievers. And, you know, things changed, obviously, in 2008 and then 2010 and then 2012. And they've had a little bit of a kind of period in the middle. But one of my best mates is Spanish, and we were talking about it. He was like, it's good to see. It was after the Euros. He was like, it's great to see the drought ended. I was like, what drought? How about drought? And I was like, you've missed what, 10 years? I was like, that's not a drought, mate. That's a gap in the ocean. Like, you're not like that. And I think the thing is, what I find interesting about them is that there is that kind of, this is going to be a hot game, right? Like, we know this. It's outdoors. It's not in one of these stadiums that has the roof on it. It's not going to be weather controlled. It's going to be in New Jersey. The air conditioning is questionable considering of all these forest fires, et cetera, going on up there at the moment where games are being delayed. So that's a question mark. But on top of everything else, like, Argentina are surely absolutely slammed, like absolutely knackered. They have had to come from behind in like all of these games. They have had to go to extra time twice. They've had to go through the mill to get where they've got to. Spain have effectively coasted to this point. They only really got a scare a little bit in the Portugal game, although it never really felt like Portugal were going to score. And then when Belgium equalised and they just sort of spent the second half hammering on the door, France never really laid a glove. They didn't really break a sweat. And they're going into this game assuming, and I would assume, that they're going to have the majority of the ball in the first half, that they're going to dominate possession, they're going to just knock it around and make life hard for Argentina. Like, do they just effectively wear them down to the point where they are unable to stand against it, where the legs finally start to tire? And I know it is a World Cup final, and therefore people are obviously going to raise their game to a degree. And obviously there is an element of, it doesn't matter, this is the last game of this run, you put everything you possibly have. But I don't know how much is left in those legs. And I think that Spain have the capacity to effectively just like grindstone you down until there is nothing left to play against. And then there is still, and we haven't mentioned him up to this point, which is nuts, there is still Lamine Yamal, who I think has had very good games in the last couple of games without necessarily being the standout creative spark that we maybe were expecting from him going into this World Cup. But he is also potentially due a moment. And there's also the Messi, Yamal comparison, the baby baptizing photo, et cetera, all of that, the narrative that's going to run up against it. I mean, is this the day that Lamine Yamal announces himself on the world stage? You wouldn't bet against that either.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously waiting for the big, big moment at this World Cup for him. I think he's been really good, but obviously, has he got one goal, zero assists or something like that?
Yeah, it depends if you count a penalty foul as an assist, but let's just call it one and one for a posterity's sake. But it is one of those where he has been really impressive, but the numbers on the boards don't necessarily reflect it.
Yeah.
And that's okay, right? Like, as in, you don't have to score goals.
Like,
we're not talking about Rodri in that kind of manner, but Lamine Yamal is a creative spark. You expect him to be in the mix of these kind of things, and actually his game has been much quieter with Spain than there necessarily has been for Barcelona. That's not always a bad thing, but I think that he is probably due a breakout moment on the big stage.
Yeah, and obviously, like, if you were to talk about a Ballon d'Or contender for Messi, then potentially, you know, Yamal would come into that frame if he can go and win Spain the World Cup final. That's probably Messi's biggest challenger, really, if that was to happen. Now, could Mbappe and Kane probably slip away now? But there was a thing about Spain. So I understand the boring conversation. I don't necessarily agree with it being boring, but I understand what people are saying. That wasn't against France. I think that changed a bit. I think we saw a bit more of the emotive play, a bit more passion and character, and just emotion coming out in their play a bit more. I think it helped them to the win on that occasion. And I think we will see a bit more of that come out. And I think that kind of personality in the play will suit Lamine Yamal. He wants his big moment. He's not try hard to the extent that like it works against him either. You know, there are some players that, you know, tie themselves in knots, like so desperate to pull off a trick and then score a wonder goal that they just can't produce in a moment like that. But Lamine is just effortless in his footwork. Like he pulls things off at the top level in the biggest games without barely a second's thought. I was making fun of him the other day. We were watching the warm-up for the Spain-France game on the TV, and it zoomed in on him while they were chatting about him. And he was trying to flick the ball up in this certain way. And he tried like five times and he failed every time. And like I was jesting, like making fun, saying to Dylan, "Oh my God, how do you even like this player? He can't even flick the ball up to start doing kick-ups." And then I was like, Dad, stop, stop. And he was getting annoyed. And then like 2 seconds later, they cut to him and he was just like, it was almost like what Maradona did on the pitch before that game that day, where he's like balancing them on his shoulders. And it's like the kid's just having fun still. And he's still not old enough or hasn't been in the game long enough to have been burned by any criticisms or reports or anything like that yet. He's still a kid having fun. And like that does excite me for the final. And like the comparisons between him and Messi that you point out are absolutely undeniable, and they're going to happen in the next couple of days. There's literally, as you say, a picture of Messi holding him as a baby. I can't even believe that that exists. Like that is, it's crazy that exists, right? But maybe at the end of this game, Yamal's made the difference and he's carrying Messi off the pitch. Like maybe we get to that point, because it's going to take an incredible performance to kind of overshadow Messi in this tournament. But if anyone's capable of it, mate, we're probably looking at Lamine.
Do you know what's funny? Like you talk about not being burned. And I was thinking about this. I was like, Lamine Yamal hasn't had a reason to be burned yet. Right? Like he broke through like right at the end of that 22-23 season. They won the league. I think he won just about enough caps to get a medal. Then he basically had the next season, but the whole team was all over the place and he was kind of the star boy. They didn't win anything that year, but he was like, oh, okay, the next great hope. Then in 2024-25, he wins a domestic treble. Right? Then in 25-26, he wins the league again. He wins the Copa del Rey in 25 and the Supercopa twice. He wins the Euros in 2004. He gets a Ballon d'Or runner-up medal in 2025. Now, there's been nothing to burn Lamine Yamal. Yeah, there hasn't been a moment where it's like, oh, the team were looking to you and it hasn't delivered. And no, I'm not saying that happens. And I hope it never does, right? Like, I hope it never does. I hope nothing that ever comes across him, and things will happen. It's football, right? Like, things change and there are different teams that win titles and all of that. But I hope it never does change him. But I think that's a forlorn hope as much as anything else. That's a very, very naive thing to say. But up to this point, like if he was to be on the wrong side of a losing battle in a World Cup final, maybe that is like a first scar. And in some ways, I don't want to see that yet. I'm not ready for that. In the same way that I'm not ready, we talked about before, I'm not ready to see Lionel Messi's last game at World Cup.
Well,
I'm not ready to see Lamine Yamal scarred yet either.
Can you imagine we get to a penalty shootout and either Messi or Lamine Yamal misses their kick?
I don't want to think about it. I don't want to think
like,
about it.
Can you imagine that that's what we get to? Not impossible. Not impossible. I mean, as we say, like Argentina do have a knack of getting a games to go the duration. So perhaps they can make something happen here. I do think Spain are the better team. I do think Spain are the best football team at this World Cup. But I also begrudgingly will give Argentina the sense that they are the team that absolutely you love to hate, basically. And that's a compliment to them. Like, obviously, if they were playing England, I hated all of them. But, like, they have traits that are horrible. But if you're Argentinian, you absolutely love what they are giving you every single game because they refuse to die. And that will be the same case in this final. If Spain do go 1-0 up, as I would predict they will, it'll be so fascinating to see what Argentina can come back with.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, I suppose that leads us quite nicely to a finishing prediction. And I'll lead us off because before this tournament began, I said that I thought Spain would win it. And my predictions before tournaments in the last two World Cups and the last two Euros have all been spot on. So if we get a fifth one in a row, I'm going to be pretty pleased. I can't predict games week by week. I'm really bad at predictions, apart from in tournament settings. This seems to be where I do my best work. So I called Spain before the tournament began. I wavered on them a bit ahead of that France game in terms of where I had them pegged, but I will stick with my original guns now and say that I think that the winner of this tournament came out of that France-Spain semi-final. I think they beat Argentina, but not without a real scrap in it. I think it's 2-1, Spain go 2-0 up and Argentina find one back, and it's one of those mental ends.
Oh, really? I've got a feeling they do it in extra time. I think that Argentina might take it to the wire and they might get to extra time and you think, are they really going to do this? And actually they come up short and Spain do manage to prove that discipline and composure and nice passing is the way to, in the end, win another World Cup. So I think I'll lean towards that. But it's going to be a fascinating game, mate. Can't wait.
I think that Argentina will quite like being underdogs as well. I think they quite liked being underdogs against England in the semi-final. I think they will have no problem coming into this game as underdogs against Spain. Even as the reigning World Cup holders, they will try to spin that narrative and put themselves in that position because it suits them, right? Like, because it suits them to be written off. It suits them for teams to wait, kind of lay off a little bit towards the end if they have a lead and they know where they can hurt you. We had so many people predicting the game yesterday on the radio. Not one of them picked an Argentina win in normal time. A couple of them picked Argentina wins in extra time or penalties. But, you know, ultimately what happened was Argentina found a way. And I think you would be, whilst I think that Spain win this, I think you'd be a fool to bet against Argentina finding a way again at the same time. So yeah. I think we're on for an absolutely fascinating final. And one thing that I should add to that before we go is we've got the finalissima that we were denied. Right, the champions of Europe against the champions of South America, the game that was supposed to take place in March that never did. We've got the champions of Europe against the champions of South America for the first time ever in a World Cup final, mm-hmm. which is incredibly cool. This is a history-making event, and in some ways it feels right that actually are these two going head-to-head, yeah. considering where they stand within the world's game.
Yeah, that is nice. That is a nice element to this game. Two different cultures, two different philosophies. But two amazing, fanatical footballing countries and two sets of brilliant players that play football differently. And we'll see, mate. We'll see. We'll see.
Styles make fights, mate. Styles make fights. And I think we're on for a very, very special fight in this World Cup final. We'll be back next week to work through all of the reaction to that game. And of course, start looking forward to the season ahead as well. This football, it never stops. But for now, all that's left for me to do is say a massive thank you to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I'm Jack Collins. This has been your World Cup final preview here on Ranks FC. We hope you've enjoyed all the coverage across the course of this tournament. We've really loved making it for you, but we'll see you all very, very shortly, Ranks squad. Take it easy. Peace.